you like this episode, please subscribe, share with others, rate and review so we can continue to bring you great programming.
This is The Thing About Cars, a podcast for car enthusiasts and the people who love them.
Hello and welcome to The Thing About Cars. We have a full house around the table today. I see Dave. How are you, Dave?
Apparently the least fired up member of the table.
Let's go to the most fired up by person. I think that's Misty. Misty, how are you?
I am. Oh, can't even talk. And if I do talk, it'll be in Dutch.
Hello for mom.
Tim,
Tim
has also seen the shenanigans. Tim, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. And Dachor, yeah.
Yes, excellent. And Ben?
Well, if I'm fired up, bring some barbecue.
That sounds good. Maybe we should do that for dinner. So, Ben, I think you've got our trivia question for today.
Yes, I do.
Take it away.
And it has nothing to do with the topics we're going to get into here.
Okay.
All right. Of the currently existing Japanese auto manufacturers, which one made cars first? Was it Toyota, Mitsubishi, Nissan, or Mazda? Shall I read those again?
Yeah, please.
Yeah. Of the currently existing Japanese auto manufacturers, which made cars first? Was it Toyota? Was it Mitsubishi? Was it Nissan? Or was it Mazda?
Okay. We'll answer that at the end of the show. Yep.
Yep.
Got an answer? All right. We'll answer that at the end of the show. On our last episode, we were wondering about something very specific, and we knew we had to bring Tim to the table to have this discussion. Dave, you want to introduce this one?
Sure. So as listeners of the show know, Misty has a passion for Formula One racing that other people reserve for, say, Islam. My passions of racing have always leaned more towards horse racing or a very slight interest in Le Mans. But since I've been on the show, I've tried to learn more so I could hold my own with Misty, and we've just given up on that bloody idea. But one of the things that has just mesmerized me is the nomenclature. You know, the fact that there's Formula One, Formula Two, Formula Three, Formula Four. Intellectually made sense until I start reading about them. But then we overlay Formula E, Formula Regional, Formula BMW, Formula 3000, Formula Pi, Formula 42, Formula Star Trek, Formula Star Wars, Formula Wookiee. So I would like some insight on behalf of all the listeners who share my mesmerization or bewilderment into formula nomenclature and how the differences are determined.
Right. And where does the bollard fit into all this?
Well, you know, you mentioned before we started the show, the term anthropomorphized bollard came up, and I believe I dated one of those in the late 1980s.
A bollard.
This is terrible.
I'm just ignoring that. A bollard, it's basically just a post that prevents you from like traffic from entering an area, and they use them a lot in Formula One to define track limits.
Yep. So what's this guy?
Oh dear.
I've got a terrible X-rated joke that I'll bring up later at some point, but it's just
this weekend, besides being the penultimate, F1 race was also F2, and huge congrats to Oscar Piastri for winning. Total shame he doesn't have an F1 seat for next year.
Yeah.
They just kept hitting this bollard and just kept getting like knocked into the middle of the track. You know, this poor bollard was just laying in the middle of the track. All pathetic. I think even the F2 Twitter feed, you know, was like, the poor bollard got hit again. And we're all like, oh, poor bollard.
It's true. The bollard is not doing well.
it was not doing well at all. There's a lot of track, you know, a lot of terms that people are like, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? Hamilton had to replace his ICE this weekend. You know, he had to replace his internal combustion engine. I don't know. I mean, tell me what you want to know. And I guess.
Okay. So, when you talk about all the different formula, this formula, that formula, whatever, some of that comes down to whether or not it's a worldwide championship or a regional championship or a specific country only champion, like Formula One and Formula Two, those are worldwide traveling series. Formula E is also a worldwide traveling series. But then to feed into all these series, you also have the regional series like Formula Three. There's one for many of the European countries, and I believe an overall European Formula Three championship. And then in Formula Four, yeah, it's again, I think here in the US, we have a, I should say here in North America, we have a Formula Four Americas series, since between Canada, the US, and Mexico, haven't been enough cars to do a championship for each country. So, and when you mentioned Formula 3000, well, that's one of the bad parts of all this alphanumeric and other conventions of naming the series. It used to be called Formula 2 back in the 70s, and then they wanted to distinguish it differently for some reason. So they started calling it Formula 3000 because they had 3-liter engines where Formula 1 had 3.5 liter engines. And then they thought that, well, okay, that doesn't relate well enough to Formula 1, so then we're going to call it GP2. And then they called it Formula 2 again because, well, that just makes sense, doesn't it? Is everything clear as mud now, Dave?
Well, you know, so this is the question, so, and probably naivete on my part. I assumed that there were differences, such as the displacement of the engine, that there were differences in the actual construct of the cars and powers of the engine, not yes. that it was... So there are... Okay.
Yes. So if you start at the top with Formula One, those are a 1,000 horsepower power plant, a 1.6 liter V6 turbocharged engine with a hybrid system making 800 and 200 horsepower respectively. So for a total of 1,000 horsepower. Then GP2, I think, is more like maybe 500 or 600 horsepower. Formula Three is more like 300 to 400 horsepower, I think. And then on down the line. So generally, the lower the number, the higher the horsepower, the faster.
The reason it's called formula is because the idea is that the cars are all built to a set formula. And I think, I could be wrong, it's been a while since I actually looked really hard at this. And it's just been the past year or two that I've really gotten back into F2 and F3. I think there's less wiggle room in F2 and F3 on like customization of the car. So it's a little more equal, like within karting, like go-karting, which is the ultimate feeder for auto sports, especially in Europe. Like all the karts are exactly the same. They're not allowed to do, you know, and I think this is a big complaint with a lot of people in regards to F1 is the fact that, as usual, money wins a lot of times. You know, that's why you see Haas struggling. That's why you see Williams struggling, and even Ferrari, because they just don't have the budget that, even with the budget cap that's been introduced, they just don't have the budget that Mercedes and Red Bull have.
Right. And yeah, we'll see how the budget cap goes going forward, because now coming next season, there'll be cars that were designed and constructed under the full budget cap, where in previous seasons, everyone could have spent as much as money as they could possibly bring in for all the research and development and making unobtainium materials. And a lot of the budget goes into buying computer time. So how many teraflops of data they were allowed to compute over a particular season.
And I think, and they also, I think that was the last season that they cut down some of the top teams' time in the wind tunnel.
Right. Yes.
You know, that's a huge part of it, you know, because aerodynamics and every track is different. You know, you hear people say, oh, this is a Mercedes track, or this is a Red Bull track, or this is a Ferrari track. It's because of the way that the cars themselves, you know, like some tracks require more downforce, some tracks require more speed. You know,
Is it safe to say that the formula system is trying to drive a balance of fairness, or let's just say a balance between driving skill and automotive engineering?
In the lower formula, a lot of the times they're identical cars. So where everyone is basically given the same power plant and chassis and set of aerodynamic pieces to work with. And the only things that they can really change out are your suspension settings, your shock absorber settings, tire pressures. So that to a certain extent, it's the driver coming to the fore, but also the engineering prowess of setting the car up, making all the correct give and take, like Misty said. Some tracks require more downforce, some require a higher top end speed. So it's customizing the car to suit the characteristics of every track.
Yeah, whereas with F1, you have Mercedes producing their own engines, and then they're selling them to others, you know, and Honda was coming in, and Renault coming in, you know, with their own engines. So you have like constructors, and then you have like customer teams, where they're buying engines from Mercedes or Renault. And now with Honda pulling out of F1, basically Red Bull has bought Honda and will be producing their own engines. And I don't, you know, I don't agree with that. I think everybody should have the exact same base engine made from an independent third party. I mean, Jesus, let Porsche make the engines for everyone and everybody else have to work around that.
Well, doesn't NASCAR have some of the same problems?
Yes. NASCAR has actually become more and more spec as years have gone on. Well, I think what the car that's coming out for NASCAR, I believe it's this coming year, is basically going to be a spec chassis made by Dallara, which is the same company that makes all of the IndyCar chassis. And, you know, it's the same they've been running the same silhouette as far as bodywork goes for the last 10 years or so. And, you know, so basically the only difference between the manufacturers is which motor you use. And going back 10 years ago, all the motors were often developed by each individual team. But now they've gone to a customer model where all the Ford motors come from one factory, you know, and same thing for Chevy and Toyota. So it's an attempt to keep costs down because, yeah, otherwise you want to try to avoid the spending your way to a championship.
Well, I mean, you know, to Misty's point, there's that whole idea of money wins. And I mean, I think you either want one of two things. You either want a race where everything's equal and it's just skill versus skill, or you really want the market to define where innovation takes place and how that improves a race. And then it's, at that point, it's money wins. So,
well, I mean, I can see your point on innovation if this was something that fed into consumer cars or consumer transportation. But as much as Tim and I may dream about it, Formula One is not going to feed into there. There might be small breakthroughs in the area of lubrication or, you know, whatever. But as far as it have as far as what Mercedes, AMG, Petronas, or Red Bull or Renault are developing, the majority of what they're developing is not going to feed into general consumer transportation.
It's become such a specialized technology that there's not really much crossover.
Yeah.
Would you say that's even that also applies to Formula E?
Yes, because Formula E started off running a completely spec series. Everybody had the same motors, same batteries, same control units. But I believe in the last couple of years, I don't follow Formula E very closely, but they have been allowing the teams to have a larger input into what's going into the cars as far as the power plant goes.
But yeah. I don't have a problem with having how good your engineering team is in setting the car up for this track play a small part, but especially for the past few years. I mean, come on, Mercedes is on their 8th Constructors Championship.
Right.
They've won 7 of the last 8 seasons. It's not all Lewis Nico won that good season. They've won 7 of the last 8 World Drivers Championships. So, and to be perfectly honest, Red Bull was starting for the same with Sebastian Vettel until the big rule change. So it's only a major rule change that seems to shake up who has an advantage. And I don't think that, I mean, it used to be that Williams was a major player. Now Williams, we're just kind of like, oh, they finished in the top 15. Good for them. That's awesome.
So, you
know, right. Those crappy little fellows. Yeah. Yeah. But that's the racing is always gone. There's peaks and valleys for every team and for every driver. A lot of times, you know, Sebastian Vettel, like you mentioned, won 4 championships in a row, but he likes a car that performs that handles in a particular way. He likes one where the back end of the car has to be very planted.
Yeah.
Where,
and they all do. And speaking of Seb, can we just take a moment to embrace how wholesome he is? Last week in Jeddah, Seb hosted a female-only karting event for women in Saudi Arabia to get women into motorsports. And I think I said this last week too, but I'm going to say it again because Seb is just the cutest little thing. I just love him.
Yeah. And you got to remember that Saudi Arabia has only allowed women to drive on public roads for like the last 5 years at the most.
Something like that. Yeah.
And during the build-up, like the pre-race stuff, Seb actually wore a t-shirt that had been signed by all of the participants in his karting camp.
Awesome.
And he's also been really, really upfront about wearing Pride stuff during their We Races 1 as well as that. So Seb is just coming out. You know, there were times when I was like, Seb, you need to stop. And now he's just like, he's mellowed a little bit and he's become really, really wholesome.
That's nice.
It is.
So let's go back to our original question. Do the delineations between the different formula types make sense?
Yeah,
I think they do. Yeah,
because it's a step up. I mean, it's like, you know, you don't start out when you're 15 with your learner's permit in a McLaren F1. You need to drive that 1978 Toyota Corolla with the 1250cc engine, which is smaller than your stepdad's motorcycle engine. Not that I'm speaking from personal experience. And to get used to that pressure, it's kind of like, you remember when you went from elementary school where you were in the same room with the same teacher all day long for all 5 to 6 subjects?
Yes.
And then suddenly you were thrown into middle school and you had to figure out how to juggle different teachers and different expectations and
all those new hormones. Yes.
Yeah. And that's exactly what the system is meant to do, because the pressure for a Formula One driver is absolutely incredibly insane. People think, oh, you're just driving a car for 58 laps. I've seen some of these guys, especially when it's like the more Middle Eastern, you know, or the warmer races, and they lose kilos just from sweating. And those cars are pulling an amazing amount of G's, especially when you're rear-ended by somebody who's not paying attention. I'm not naming any names, Lewis Hamilton. Thank you. But I think it's also a chance for these young men and hopefully very soon young women to decide, is this the life I want to lead?
Yeah. And you mentioned hopefully soon women. One formula that we didn't mention was Formula W, which has run this past year and was also back in 2019, which is a series with the cars equivalent to Formula 3 that have been running along with Formula 1 series, meaning that they race on the same weekends, that has been all female drivers and all chosen from pretty much the top female drivers that every country has had to offer, trying to showcase their talents to make them show up, I guess, more as a viable option for other series to pick them up.
Right.
Yeah, my preference, of course, is integrated racing, but okay, I'll take it.
Right. I think that's one of the great things about racing is that it's one of the few sports that men and female can compete on an equal basis.
Right. Yep.
All right. So let's wrap that particular topic. And if there are any other questions, let's ask our listener to write to us and say, but wait, you forgot this or whatever. So
so-and-so was wrong about that.
Did you say, let's ask our listener?
Yes.
People might have listening parties for this.
That one listener who's out there.
I'll have you know that I've brought in at least one listener from Australia.
Okay,
I just want you to know that.
So we can refer to them as both listeners.
Both listeners. One is named Phil and the other one's named what?
I have Claudia. No idea what his name
Claudia
is.
Claudia and Phil.
Yeah, I have no idea what this person's name is. I just talked to him on a Discord channel, so I don't know what their real name is.
All right. So let's
Discord Dave.
We have a few minutes left here. We have approximately 8 minutes left. I want to answer a few car questions that I solicited from friends on my own Facebook page. I simply said, send us your car questions. And I got like 5 or 6 of them, maybe. So
5 or 6 more than I got.
Really?
Yeah, I got sucky friends.
Oh, man. All right. So my first question is from our friend Brian Phillips. Brian says, is it better to put the car in park? This is a poorly phrased, grammatically incorrect question. Is it better to
criticizing you, Brian.
Yeah. Learn to freaking write, Brian. Is it better to put the car
in park? Brian just unfriended you on Facebook.
Oops. Brian asks, is it better to put the car in park? And here, I'm just going to read it the way you wrote it because my brain keeps falling apart. Is it better to put the car in park? It use the hold button when stopped in an extended period. So is it better to put the car in park or use the hold button when stopped for an extended period? And my first question was, what the heck is a hold button? So
you don't have a hold button?
My car's too old. I learned what a hold button is.
Mine too.
Yeah.
Mine doesn't, but I think the MX5, the CX5 my husband had, and maybe the whatever box of crap he's driving right now does. And it's just basically, you have to hold it on a hill. And I'm like, what's wrong with y'all? Didn't y'all grow up in Georgia? We got hills. Can't you hold your own car on a hill? Just using your clutch.
So Brian actually sent a picture and he said, this thing, it's the button that holds the car in place while it's still in drive. He says he's found it helpful in drive-through lines. So the question is it better to put it in park or use the hold button when stopped for an extended period? What do you guys think?
Depends too on the definition of extended period, but.
My personal opinion, you put it in neutral. Lift off the clutch and hold it with your brakes. And if you can't do that, then why are you driving?
I'll tell you what, though. If it has a hold button, I'll bet you it doesn't have a clutch.
Yeah, that's right.
That's true.
Modern cars.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd have to ask my husband because the whatever box crap he's driving right now is actually a 6-speed.
Well, this may differ between Europe and North America, though.
Good point.
I mean, over here, everything's got an automatic now.
Yeah, well... Yeah. actually, over here in Europe, you can get a driver's license that only allows you to drive automatics.
Mm-hmm. That'd be handy.
Apparently, we're still sane.
Yeah.
Like I said, I mean, a hold button for drive-through? Seriously? What are you driving through? The Mount Everest donut shop?
Well, I see his point, though, because if you're in a vehicle with an automatic and you're just putting your foot on the brake, I've seen cases where people kind of forget and lift their foot eventually. So it's not a bad idea. If you could just use your finger to start and stop and creep up through the line, I mean, that's easy.
That's what she said.
Right, hey. Exactly.
And she I did not take us there, okay?
Right. I mean, I would think that any automaker who puts that function onto the vehicle, it shouldn't have any detrimental effects, I would think. One thing to consider might be is, I really don't know the inner workings of how the hold button actually works, but say, for instance, you're in a regular automatic transmission vehicle, you're sitting at a stoplight, and you're trying to get the best possible fuel economy that you can, you should drop it out of drive into neutral or park. Because that actually is a little bit less draw on the engine's power at that point. But
well, and I mean, it's just one of those, I don't know if this thing is a matter of convenience or an actual technological improvement on anything, because I do the same thing. If I'm in a drive-thru, I'll put the car in neutral and I'll just pull up on the parking brake. If I know I'm going to be there for, like, say, less than 3 or 4 minutes.
And I don't know how the hold button works either, but if I were to assume that all it does is activate the brakes, then from a safety standpoint, I'd prefer that, because when you're in park, the only thing that holds your car from moving is a little tiny piece of metal.
Whereas, but that works all the time. I mean, that works at night. If you park on a hill, you're depending upon that parking pole, as it's called, to keep your car where it's supposed to stay.
Yeah, but if your engine is running and there's other traffic around you, I'd rather be stopped by my brakes.
Yeah.
I mean, I could go off on a whole rant on, can we stop making driving easier? I mean, I'd have a complete and utter dislike is too small of a word for this point and drive crap. If you're going to drive, you need to be able to drive. It's a skill, and I don't want everybody and their brother who managed to win a driver's license off the back of a bloody freaking Dell box to be out on the road.
Well, to play on that, I would, instead of not making driving easier, I would make the training better, make the standards for licensing a lot better. You know, a highly skilled driver sees everything in the car as a tool to control the vehicle. There was an airline pilot who commented on this in an article about Tesla Autopilot, saying, no, I would never use the car's quote unquote autopilot to take over. To me, it's just another tool to get where I'm going. I'm still in charge.
Yeah.
That's how I see all the technologies coming into cars now.
So we've got a few more minutes. Let's move to the next question. I hope we answered your question, Brian. And if we didn't, I'm sorry. That just means we have to drive your car and check out the hold button. And our friend Adam Hart asks a question. Adam asks, are computerized engines necessary to achieve their benefits, or has the auto industry just been using computers as a way around better engineering? Which I think is a really good question.
No, you have to have computers to control that.
Yes. You do?
Because due to emissions controls and the CAFE standards, your corporate average fuel economy, where vehicles have to, across an entire manufacturer's offering, have to make a certain miles per gallon, you have to have fuel injection. There's no way to have a carburetor get all this done. And in order to have fuel injection, in the old days, 60s, early 70s, there were mechanical fuel injection systems that were unreliable and didn't have all the benefits that electronic fuel injection does. So, yes, you have to have it.
I'm going to actually go also, I'm going to object to Adam's philosophy, the philosophy behind the question, because it assumes that engineering and computer integration are exclusive, or that somehow computer integration is a cheat. Good engineering is always about finding better, more efficient ways and safer ways to do things. And if there was a way to integrate Fruit Loops to improve something, then we should be integrating Fruit Loops. I want that car.
Yeah. Ben,
Lucky Charms one.
Did you know that all the Fruit Loops actually taste the same? The only difference between them is the coloring?
Yeah.
Okay.
My husband says that about Schampius, and I fully disagree with him. The green ones taste better.
All right. So those are our two questions for the day. We have one more, but we'll save it for our next episode since we are out of time. What happens now in the world of racing, you guys? Can we do that in 2 minutes or less? What comes next?
We cannot do that in 2 minutes or less. Let's do that next week. Okay. This was the final race of the season. And to be perfectly honest, to give it the attention and the justice it deserves, we need to wait on the stewards' decision.
Right.
And they just adjourned, and they're not going to pick it back up for another 30 minutes. I'm over here like frantically, you know.
So let's ask.
Toto Wolf owes me like 5 keyboards by now.
Let's ask Phil, the listener, to actually send us some questions or comments and get us ready for what comes next in the world of racing.
Well, the problem with that is,
hold on. What'd you say, Dave?
I was going to say the problem with that is Phil is only an anthropomorphic bollard.
Can we change our logo to, you know, can we have like Thingy's a bollard as our mascot now, please?
We're going to produce but, a hey, thing
for the rest of the auto racing fans out there. You know, the racing is only done in the Northern Hemisphere until February for the 24 hours of Daytona. If you're like racing in general, there's still series in Australia. Their V8 Supercar series is fun to watch. You can catch it on TV.
Okay.
Yep.
Very
and
cool.
And let's not forget, this has been that there's not just Formula One. You've got Porsche Super Cup. There's so many. You've got the MX5 series. I mean, there's so many cars out there. You'll always find something that tickles your fancy.
Yeah. And please, by all means, Phil the Bollard and whoever else is listening, please introduce us to the new thing in the world of racing that really turns your crank. We want to learn about it and learn more about the culture and always looking for that kind of input. So please drop us a line via our website or via our Facebook page. And if you have a moment, please rate us on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or wherever else you find the show. Dave gave me a timeout symbol. What's up?
You have a trivia question to answer.
Oh, my God. Why? How could I forget that?
5-second penalty.
5-second
drive through penalty.
Dave, sorry, Dave. Ben, take it away.
All right. So our question is, of the currently existing Japanese auto manufacturers, which one made cars first? Was it Toyota, Mitsubishi, Nissan, or Mazda?
And specifically a car, meaning four wheels and a motor, right?
Yeah, let's read it that way. Sure.
Sure. Okay. Who goes first, Ben?
Oh, I don't know. Since everybody's pretty quiet, I'm guessing they're all scratching their heads. And
yeah. Answer. Yeah.
I'll Mitsubishi.
Tim says Mitsubishi. Misty, what do you think?
Nissan.
You say Nissan?
Yeah, I say Nissan.
Dave, what do you think?
For the hell of it, I'll go Toyota.
And just to round it out, I'll go Honda. So what's right?
Well, Honda wasn't even in the choices. So,
He's a Honda fanboy at heart.
So. I don't blame him. Yeah, they make pretty decent stuff. But no, the answer is Nissan.
Yeah, way to go, Misty.
Yeah, originally only founded. Go ahead.
I was going to say only because they were originally like Datsun.
No, they're originally Prince.
They go back farther than Datsun. Yeah, they were originally founded in 1911 as Kaishinsha Motor Car Works, which in Japanese worked out to something like Kaishinsha Jidosha Kojo, which also translates as a good company automobile manufacturer. The company introduced its first car in 1914, changed names several times before becoming Nissan Motor Company Limited in 1934. And the name Nissan is basically an abbreviation of the Tokyo Stock Exchange symbol. NISIN was short for Nihon Sangyo, which means Japan Industries. And this is all a slight oversimplification of all the mergers and acquisitions along the way, but it's close enough for our purposes. The name most used, the name used the most before actually branding themselves as Nissan was DAT, which was an acronym of the initials of the surnames of the company's three investors. And DAT led to the name Datsun, which I believe literally meant something like son of Dot. And they introduced that name in 1931 on one model. And just to tell you where all those other companies in our choices rank in this, Toyota started making automatic looms in the 1920s and then introduced their first car in 1933. Mitsubishi is a holding company that dates all the way back into the 19th century, but their first car bearing the name was built in 1917, but it was hand-built and expensive and a commercial failure, and they then didn't really get off the ground as an automaker until after World War II. The Toyo Kogyo Company entered vehicle production in 1931 with a little vehicle called the Mazda Go, which was an auto rickshaw. Of course, this became the Mazda company, and they introduced trucks in the late 50s, and the cars, actual four-wheel cars, finally came in 1960.
Okay.
Best fun I ever had in India was riding an auto rickshaw. It was probably not very safe, but I was like, okay, sounds like fun to me.
Well, the little Mazda Go one was also used largely like an industrial thing, you know, to drive things around factories. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're little pick-up bed on it.
The India experience, we'll have to talk. We've talked about that on the show before in the past, but oh my God, the roads in India are just frightening. But
very similar to Paris. You know, those stripes painted there aren't actually for traffic control. They're just pretty.
So in India, there are only two rules to traffic. Stay as far to the left as possible and don't have any accidents. That's it.
Yeah.
And make sure your horn works.
And whoever, if there's an accident, whoever wins the fist fight afterwards was in the right.
Oh, good.
Yeah. True story.
So thank you to our listeners. And again, please keep us in touch with what's going on in your world. In the meantime, like I said, please leave us some feedback. tell your friends about us, and we will see you with another episode in about a week. Stay safe, y'all.
See ya.
Laters.
Bye now.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.